we're not running a scouting service. We're running a college basketball program, and you got to have horses. But sometimes you don't know who those horses are going to be.
How is it that you stay true to yourself, and how is it you have stayed true to the values that drive you, man?
I mentioned to a number of people Coach Painter was going to be the speaker tonight. Every person said, class act, nicest coach I've ever met.
The one thing that we all can fix that we don't want to fix is ourselves. Why do you want to play 5 or 8 minutes when in 4 years you can play 30 minutes? You got to be able to get them, and then to grow them, you got to be able to keep them. There's things out there screaming, don't take me. But sometimes our old football coach, Joe Tiller, used to say it like, don't be blinded by what you don't have. You're really going to take off as a player once you start getting over yourself. But you're really going to take off as a coach when you get over yourself.
How is it that you're able to align the messaging that you're doing, using the same language, using similar terms, and making sure that even though everyone has different personalities, the kids are hearing the same things? We talk about you can only grow through discomfort. And how do you help your people figure out how to create that order out of the complexity? There has to be just some intense moments in your practice.
I want to see what you're all about. Like, not just like as a player, but just that body language and how you treat other people in high school. I mean, that's who you are.
You know, you never want to follow a legend, but you were following a mentor. What is it that still drives you with all the success you have? Is it the players? Is it the relationships?
Yeah.
What is it?
I like taking somebody that nobody else wants, and they end up being players.
Matt, thank you so much for joining us today on the Athletics and Business Podcast. I am beyond thrilled to have you here. I know how hard it is for you to carve out time. So thank you, my friend.
No problem. Thank you for having me on.
I'm going to jump right into it. You ask anybody in the business, right? Anybody who knows anything about the business of college basketball, and they'll say, Matt Painter, great player, Hall of Fame coach, even better person. So my question to you is this, is it's evolved. I mean, it's changed so much. You've seen so many things over the years of your coaching career. How is it that you stay true to yourself, and how is it you have stayed true to the values that drive you, Matt?
I was just talking about it. Like, the one thing that we all can fix that we don't want to fix is ourselves. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the one thing, like, you know, you think, I got to get this guy to box out. I got to get this guy to run. I got to work with this guy on his shot. But deep down schematically, like, you got to know what you're doing for your personnel. And sometimes that changes, sometimes that doesn't change, but you also got to reach each guy. So from a recruiting standpoint to an evaluation standpoint, you can't just do the same thing with every single guy, because not every single guy is the same way. And so just being able to reach them and being honest with them, I think that's the thing that we've tried to do in recruiting more than anything, is be as honest as we can. Because, like, you get to a point to where everyone says it to you, like, well, how are you going to use me? And I always used to, like, just give some dissertation, right? Like, okay, this is what I'm going to say, what I'm saying. And a part of me saying it was thinking, well, what does he want to hear, right? We are in the business of sales. Like, what does he want to hear? But then once they get there, like, what if somebody just flat beats him out? Well, that goes totally against, like, anything you said. Like, there was no caveats in what you said. You just said, how are you going to use me? And you answered it. So I always preface this by saying the last, like, 5, 6, 7 years, however, kind of changed, is like, if you're going to become one of our top 2 or 3 scorers, here's how I'm going to use you. If you don't, then you're going to have to blend in with those top 2 or 3 scorers from an offensive standpoint. And then right away, like, you can see the light go off. I said, has anybody said this to you? Other coaches said this to you?
Right.
And they'll be like, no, you're the only one. I go, well, they're going to say it to you. They're just not going to say it to you until November 1st, before that first exhibition game. And I just said, because I used to be one of those guys. And I just said, and I didn't realize what I was doing. I just realized, hey, man, I got to sell Purdue. I got to sell this opportunity. But all we're doing is overselling it. But if we get them, we're creating a problem. And now they're like, my assistants will be like, hey, just keep doing what you're doing, coach. We're going to have nobody on our roster. Like, this is great. Like, I'm like, no, we're going to have people on our roster. People want to come here. We might not be able to get a top 50, top 70 guy all the time. But it's still a pretty special place. We got good people. We got good education. Basketball crazy when it comes to our fans. So, like, that's really helped us. It's helped us evolve. It's helped us get better in role definition. It's helped us keep our players. Like, we've done the best job in the country for a high major program in keeping our guys. I wouldn't say we're under promising. We're just trying to be really, really honest and say, hey, man, like, you're not going to roll in here and we're going to throw you the ball more than Zach Edey. Like, that's just not going to work. But when Zach Edey came in, you know, I prefaced that the same way. Like, you know, I didn't promise him anything. I was like, hey, you got to get better. His number one thing to me was, I don't want a redshirt because I redshirt guys. And they'll be like, well, who are you going to redshirt this year? I go, I don't know. I'm waiting to watch him in practice. And so when they get there, like, why do you want to play 5 or 8 minutes when in 4 years you can play 30 minutes? Like, it makes no sense to me. Like, why do you want to have a heavier load academically when you can have a lighter load academically and get the same degree? And then who the hell wants to go out into the real world early? Let's be honest. Like, the only people that like shake their head at that are the people that haven't done it yet. Every person that's went out there that's in their mid 50s are like, yeah, I'd love to have an extra year of college. But when you're 19 years old, you look at redshirting like it's a death sentence, when in reality, it's the best thing for you because now you get to grow. Now you get to improve and it doesn't cost you a year. If you sit the bench or you play 5 to 8 minutes, like, you're not going to look back on that and say, you know what, that's okay. Like, you're just not. You're going to look back and go, I wasted a year. Well, now you don't waste a year. So we try to do things kind of really like people were doing it 20 years ago. And we just stay with it because education hasn't changed. The game has changed. Things around the game has changed. But last time I checked, taking care of the basketball and rebounding were the two most important things. Yeah. So that hasn't changed. So there's still some things that are in there, but it's still their experience. If their experience is 3 schools in 4 years or 4 schools in 5 years, like, where's their loyalty towards? Like, when they get, you know, who are they going back and seeing? They going to all those schools? Are they like only with the one they graduated, if they graduated? So, like, learn to really recruit some guys that fit, that love the game, that education's important, and to have that balance. And then I think you got a better chance to be successful.
So when you're honest up front, right, like in the recruiting process, when you made that transition, obviously solves a lot of problems down the road. But does that get them, does that accelerate their self-selecting into the culture that you've had and the way that you do things?
We've been to 15 out of 17 NCAA tournaments, and we went back-to-back years, not to the tournament, 10, 11 years ago. And with that, we started personality testing. And what I didn't realize it was going to do for me was it wasn't going to give me the answers. It was just going to give me more questions. So it allows you to vet something. So what people do in the portal is people look for talent, and I'm looking for production, but I'm also looking through production through growth. Yeah. They're looking at immediate satisfaction of grabbing somebody and getting somebody. Well, if you get 6 or 7 guys and half of them are successful, you're fortunate. But now you got 3 guys, 4 guys that are unhappy. So it's so important to really understand like what you're trying to get to, but you're also really vetting. Like, we've all hired people, and I always call it the 6-month surprise. Like, you want a positive surprise after 6 months, not the negative surprise. Because
you're going to get one way or the other.
It's that resume.
It's not going to be neutral, right?
Exactly. And so that piece of it, it's so hard. Hiring is very, very difficult. And recruiting is very difficult. But what they don't understand all the time is, I know exactly who I want. I just sometimes can't get them. But how do you navigate your situation when you've struck out a couple times and still get somebody who's solid for your program? That's probably the hardest piece to do.
Well, and this is what's really cool. If I could read something that I was getting ready for when I was preparing, 2020, number 37 recruiting class, ranked recruiting class in the country.
Yeah.
2021, 41st. 2022, 30th. 2023, 73rd. But I read something where, I don't know if you had said it, or it was an observation that intellect and winning attributes supersede rankings and upside. Can you talk into that? Because that's so significant.
Yeah, like, you know, as your group is no different than like your organization or your company, it's your collective intelligence. Like where are we in our group DNA? Like who are we? Like, how do we think? How do we process? Like, there's an old adage in recruiting, you got to be able to get them, and then to grow them, you got to be able to keep them.
Right.
And if you can't keep them, you can't grow them. And so it's real simple. People look at that like, well, that obviously that's profound, but like, that's just the way it is. Like, if you keep having to train the people in your business instead of them growing because they stay, like, you're never going to get to where you need to get. Like, and you might have some success, but you're not going to have ultimate success that way. So you look at those numbers. First of all, it's impossible because the people that are evaluating them, they're evaluating normally the whole country. And it's impossible for them to really dig into each guy. And so what happens is, stereotypically, people look at some people that we recruit as not being good enough. And they look at every single person that a blue blood or people that are successful, well, they have to be good. It's actually a joke, because when they will rank people that go to those blue bloods higher, I'm not talking about Chris Webber or Glenn Robinson or Alan Henderson or people of that level. I'm just talking about somebody that's a top 50 kid that goes to a blue blood that all of a sudden is ranked 17th. And you're like, you know what? Like, I don't see that. Like, good player, but not a great player. And then when we take guys that they go off of, like, who's offered them, instead of digging into really how good they are. And then what you get is athleticism gets ranked higher than people that don't have athleticism. And they're not getting in. They're dive. I always have this argument with people. It's the talent versus production. Lean towards production. You want productive players. You want productive people. And then now, if you can't sign, so for us, we have a tough time. We've had one McDonald's All-American in 19 years, but yet we got the most wins in the Big Ten by 16 games in the last 10 years. So it kind of doesn't make a whole lot of sense, right? When you got the third most wins in the country.
But it does.
4 years. So like I could go on and on with things of that nature, but at the end of the day, we're not running a scouting service. We're running a college basketball program, and you got to have horses. But sometimes you don't know who those horses are going to be. We didn't know Zach Edey would be that guy. We thought Caleb Swanigan would be that guy. Like Carson Edwards, we thought he'd be good, but we didn't know that he'd be a two-time All-American a sophomore and junior year.
Pretty damn
good. Top 90 guy, top 100 guy. Jaden Ivey was 87. I just saw one of our graphics is the reason I know his actual number. And then in 2 years, he's the fifth pick of the draft. I was just amazed he was ranked so low. But once again, people aren't evaluating them as much as what they can do and how they can grow for who's actually recruiting them. I don't even know if that's a conscious thought on their end. It's kind of, I think it's a subconscious thought.
Yeah. And that's what I was going to ask. So like, what's the narrative when they come in, right? Like you're 87th ranked, you know, in the 87th ranked, you didn't get the respect you deserve, or they're overranked, or is it, hey, you're here, we're just going to do these things because this is what's going to get us to where we need to be.
Yeah. Well, you're ranked one or 500. We do the same thing with you. Like we're going to help you get better. We're going to work on things. We're going to, you know, unpack mentally more than anything. But that's what happens. It's a really good point, because that's what happens when you're at those elite schools, is because everybody has a plan in their head of, I'm going to be here a year. I'm going to be here 2 years. And it's hard to unpack mentally. And they put undue pressures on them, because if they don't play all the time, now they're trying to jam a full game into 15 minutes or a full game into 20 minutes, and they press. I do a seminar to start every year with our players, and it's on shot selection. And it's really over offensive efficiency and how the sausage is made and how you run offense. And I show five out of our last seven teams that have been very, very efficient on the offensive end. And I go through a lot of different things with them and showing them the differences in each team and the similarities in each team. And it's always important for them to like see, like, hey, this guy here is a freshman. He was a two-time All-American. He wasn't efficient as a freshman. Then you go to the next guy and say, oh, Caleb Swanigan, and he was runner-up National Player of the Year as a sophomore. He wasn't efficient as a freshman. And then you keep going, Dakota Mathias, who was one of our most efficient players, wasn't efficient as a freshman. And I said, you guys see what's going on here? Very talented guys, good players, but it's a hard adjustment. Mm-hmm. And now we're not talking about the hard numbers that we grew up thinking about, was how much do you average? How many rebounds do you get? Just hard numbers, right? Now we're talking, how do you play the game? You know, can you fit from a functionality standpoint? Are you a good screener? Do you have pace when you move? Do you cut? Do you understand the game? Do you understand angles? Because there's a lot to the game that brings your efficiency to the forefront or doesn't bring your efficiency to the forefront. You're learning how to play. You're learning how to do little things. And it just takes time. And these are guys that, you know, Carson Edwards played 3 years in the pro. Jaden Ivey is going to start for the Pistons this year. Caleb Swanigan was in the NBA for 3 years. Dakota Mathias has had a couple cups of coffee in the NBA. So you're dealing with guys and you're showing this to them, and you'll say, this is why it's so hard, is because you got to be detail oriented. You got to understand what you're doing. And there's another team out there, right? There's another team trying to stop you from doing that. So we really dive into that, because I think once you can become a great offensive efficient team, you're going to put the other team in binds, especially defensively, because you're making baskets, you're setting your defense when you miss. And then if you're taking good shots and you're missing them, you're giving yourself a chance to offensive rebound.
And by doing that seminar and talking about how the sausage is made, now you're kind of running to the point where it's like, you're not going to have to coach the discretionary effort, right? They're going to understand right. the way things are done here. I want to go back to something real quick before, because I do have a question related to your coordinator system, right? Guys, you just mentioned, we're right. talking about their MBA, we're talking about their performance, all high character guys. And I can remember being in a Public League All-Star game. It was either Kennedy King or Malcolm X. And I'm standing with a couple of guys from the Big Ten. I was a Division II coach at the time. And there was one kid everybody was drooling over. And I don't think it was Ronnie Fields, but it was around that time. Right. And I said, there is not a chance I would ever touch him. And someone jokingly says, and I know who it was, and I could tell you because you would know the person, but this is true to their personality. He's like, that's just because you can't get him. I said, no shit, Sherlock, right? Anyways, but I said, no, I said, because you can't lose with them. I go, you guys are all worried about who you can win with here. I said, and I was just young and dumb at the time, but it just always made sense to me. Like, right. I want to know when I recruit someone, can I lose with you? I want to know how you're going to treat the person in the cafeteria right. that has no impact on your goals. I want to know, do you hold the door for a lady you don't know on campus on your visit? You know, those things. How yeah. do you get to that, like to a Purdue guy? Like, how do you get to someone who fits into right. your culture?
Yeah, it's no different. Like, you know, everybody has trial and error. And like, you know, you take guys, you think a certain thing, but did you really do your homework? Like at first, like I was amazed that I never used to get somebody's high school stats. Like that blew my mind. Like now I look at high school stats all the time. Like these guys, hey, we need to offer this kid. I'll be like, okay, do you have his personality test? Do you have his transcript? And do you have his high school stats? No. Then we're not offering. Oh, this is a no-brainer. Like, No, that's not what we're doing. We're going to have a checks and balances here. And the number one thing I want to see on his transcript is, does he miss class? He's got 17 tardies. Like, why do we have 17 tardies here? And I'm all for it. Like, I liked hanging in the hallway in high school. Like, I'm with you. But understand the system, brother, after you get two tardies. Like, understand the deal. Like, I got to be on time.
How many times have you got those transcripts and held your breath when you started looking at them?
Ooh, right. And you see the alphabet, right? Like, you're like, hey, man, like, how hard can
it be? Reverse order.
Yeah, how hard can it be for U.S. history? Like you got a C-, or like, you know, like just didn't dress for PE. Like there's things out there screaming, right. don't take me. But sometimes right. our old football coach, Joe Tiller, used to say it like, don't be blinded by what you don't have. Your line stinks. Now you can get a good lineman. Like make sure you still do your work and make sure that guy is still for you. So yeah, a lot of that, like going in and just doing your work. I always talk about the passion for the game and then the competitive skill, but just like vetting, the personality test is more vetting than anything. You got to get into the weeds and it's not going to give you the answers. It's going to give you more questions. So you know which angle and which
test do you use?
The company is Profile, but we use the DISC test.
DISC. Okay.
Yeah.
That's awesome. I love the fact that you do that. Speaking of the type of characters and the type of kids you bring into the program, I have a slide in one of my big presentations, one of my keynotes, and it's of you during a timeout. Okay. And it's a video and it's you asking your team what they're seeing out there.
Right.
Okay? And it was a very significant moment in a very significant game. And people are like blown away by that. Can you talk about who impacted you? Like, where did that come from? The awareness right. to know how important it is because they're seeing things differently out there than you are.
Yeah.
They're probably seeing more. Where did that come yeah. from?
Well, you can't collaborate with bozos, right? So it wasn't me like having a free-for-all at a timeout. It was me talking to a really intelligent player that had the confidence to speak up and saying, hey, he's getting pressured too much. I think I know your clip. He's getting pressured too much here. You know, let me make this pass. I can make this pass. Can you make it? Yeah, I can make it. Okay, cool. But you're also dealing with the player who is speaking is very intelligent basketball player and gets it, even though he was young and gets it. The credit really goes to him, but it's also like, you're really going to take off as a player once you start getting over yourself, but you're really going to take off as a coach when you get over yourself. And that's just kind of part of where it's really helped me here in like the last 8 to 10 years at Purdue, like get over yourself. And I think like any human being is going to like be affected when people say negative things about you when you struggle. You're not human if you like you disagree with that. Like you have to agree with that. Nobody likes derogatory things to be said about them. But if you're going to start reacting to that, and I listen to it, but I don't react to it. Like sometimes there's some silver lining there. Like when we got upset in the NCAA tournament, like I had some people around me like start to like get mad when they're saying it. And I was like, hey man, they're right. Like a lot of times they're not, but they're right. We did get beat by people we should have beat. And we did fight like hell to be in great positions and then squander those things. It wasn't intentional and it's not who we are. It's just what we do. So don't try to take it personal, but we all take it personal. But like, they're right. Like, that's just part of it, man. Like, grow from it. Like, if you can't handle it, then don't coach major college basketball. So for me, I think it's important because I don't think it's fair for a lot of the young guys what they deal with because they've all grown up in social media and they will listen to things that are said that are great about them that can hurt them and then bad things about them that can hurt them. So like it could go both ways. They struggle and it could hurt them, or they have great success and then they think they're the end all be all. So it's no different than the poison underneath the sink, right? It can stay there for 100 years and not hurt anybody. But if you pick it up and swallow it, you're going to die from it.
We talk all the time with our clients about being the face and voice that your team needs to see and hear. And you are amazing in high pressure situations, right? You're neutral. You're even.
Right.
I mean, you have the energy, you have the focus. And that's so important for your team to feed off that. How did you develop that? Was that something that came natural to you as a player, or is that something over time when coaching that you developed?
Yeah, I'll tell you a quick story. When Bruce Weber got the job at Illinois, I got the head coaching job at Southern Illinois. So we had a planned trip to go Sweden, Finland, Estonia, Norway, that area to play games. So when he gets the job at Illinois, he gets his team to go on that same trip to where we're not in the same place all the time, but we are a couple times. And his team played before the Southern Illinois team. I kind of forget how it works. Well, I'd never been a head coach besides in camp. Like I coached 3 games my first year, Division III JV. We were 3-0. We were down 20 in every game. We were down. Yeah, there it is. Instant brilliance, right? So 3-0. Down 20 in every game. So that's the only time besides, you know, working with little kids in camp that I've been a head coach.
Right.
And so in the middle of this game that we're playing in one of those countries, I'm yelling at one of our guys, or I'm yelling at a ref, or I'm doing whatever. And all of a sudden I bump into somebody. And I just went all the way down the sideline to the other coach's box. And I bumped the other coach. And the guy put his arm behind me and says, "Coach," and he just like opened his hand and like get your ass back to where you belong. And I was like, "Whoa, boy, I don't have a good feel here." And then I get a couple technicals for I use my hands when I speak a lot. So if you come to practice or whatever, somebody said it to me the other day about like, "Hey man, golly, you gesture with your hands." Well, I always clasp my hands after those technicals behind my back during the game, and then I just realized like whenever I get into that way, or I get going like that, I jump over the fight a little bit. So I haven't got a technical in 10 years, but it helps me move from play to play. It helps me to stay ahead of it and not overreact to calls, not overreact to something that goes against us. And just like you would tell a player when he makes a mistake, like, "Hey, next play, man, move on." I just move on mentally and just try to think ahead. So like, I'm going to have our team prepared. So it was something that kind of happened organically because of a couple of those incidents that I had. And then I just was like, I'm a much better coach this way. And like, our fans don't look at it that way. They look at it, you know, because I follow Gene Katie, like I'm not like working the refs, right? Like I'm not getting a call. I'm not doing things. And I'm talking to the officials all the time. I'm just obviously a hair more diplomatic about it.
And, hey, it was like, a different time back then. It was a way different time.
But like, you know, be yourself. Like it's okay. Like that piece is okay. And when you follow someone as successful as I did, people are going to look at things differently like that. That's how I got to that point with it. But more than anything, just like getting over myself. Like I'm a part of what goes on here, but I look at it as I got to do my part, but it's also a small part. It's a player's game.
So to that point, you have a coordinator system, right? And there is business of college athletics, we don't even just say college basketball, college athletics at your level is incredibly ego driven. It's just, it is what it is. I mean, it's just an issue. You look at any business at the top of the top, there's a ton of egos and people have a hard time letting go, a hard time letting go of control. Sometimes it's a thing where you're beating yourself up. Like, am I not good enough as a head coach to just do this myself and not have to have? But you have, first of all, it was your idea, right? It was something that you saw as you just watching football. How did it come about? Was it a challenge for you to let go of it? Was it hard or?
Yeah. Kind of talk. And it's also like you're a part of the prep. So you're a part of, you know, getting ready and what you're going to do in practice for those 3 days. And you're talking about, here's what I think can work. Here's what not. But they normally come to me with it. Like, so they come to me and they talk about, especially offensively, they'll come and talk about some things. And then sometimes it's just like, it's status quo because you play some people that are very similar to who you've been playing. So defensively, when they come to me, they normally only have a couple things because we have a system. We're going to guard things about the same way. And then there's times like, man, I don't know if we can double the post this way. I don't know if we can handle this in ball screen defense the way we're doing it. And that's where we'll make the adjustments. And that's, and we're normally colliding at that time because they do a lot of their work beforehand. And then I do a lot of my work after we play a game. I don't ever get ahead, no matter who we play. So if we got to play somebody on Thursday, I'm just worried about them. And then we got to turn around and play on Sunday. I don't get to that until Friday morning. They might give me stuff to help me get up to speed.
Right.
So a lot of times when I come to them after I watch a couple games and all the clips, hey, I think we got to do a few things differently. Or there'd be games that you come to them and say, I don't see any change here in what we're doing. And they'd be like, yeah, me either. I think we're good here. So we're always prepared offensively for differences. I really believe you take the emotional, I wouldn't say it's guesswork, but decision-making out of it by just doing your work early to say, you know, situationally, here's what I think. And I try to flip things. I try to say, like, if I was going against us, here's what I would do. Like, I would do these things here because I think this is where we're most vulnerable. We can get exposed the most. So let's be prepared for that. Even though that isn't something that they traditionally do, just troubleshoot all vulnerable situations and scenarios and areas. So you're like, you're on top of stuff and just having everything prepared more than anything. When we switched offensively, our vernacular, everything has a meaning to it. So like it looks like it's tough. It's really the illusion of complexity. It's pretty simple, but you got to know what it means. And like we put the time into it. It's no different than a little kid in vocab words. Like if you know your vocab words, it's like, there it is.
What does that do? And then think about like the business world, right? Where you have the micromanagers, you have the people that lean over their people, whether it's from the executive level to the second line leader level to the front line. What does that do for you for mental bandwidth, right? In decision-making fatigue? It kind of frees you up a little bit during the game.
It does free you up. Yeah. But you got to make sure, like, there's nothing wrong with micromanaging somebody that doesn't have a great deal of experience and then weaning off of that. But if you just micromanage your whole group, like, you either have the wrong group or you're the wrong person, right? Like, it's just like micromanaging. There's nothing wrong with micromanaging somebody that doesn't have that experience. But someone who does have that experience and know what they're doing and they're lockstep with what you want in your organization, like, it's going to work. You're going to hurt yourself. Like, you're just going to, you know.
You know, and you talk about, so you have the offensive coordinator. You have, who does your defense? Does Paul do your defense?
Paul Loss does defense and Terry Johnson does defense. Brandon Brantley does personnel. Okay. Sasha Stefanovic does out of bounds and side out of bounds. Okay. PJ Thompson does offense. And then I do all the ATO special situations, late game stuff. And sometimes we will stay with what we normally run. And then sometimes we'll go to different specials. So we have some different packages, some different stuff in there. And I used to get into a lot of things that had to be specials at those times. And it just doesn't, you know, sometimes you think you're trying to fool somebody too much. And like, it's like you end up fooling yourself, right? Like, just stick with the strengths of your team. If you want to get into something different, or you wanted to, like, when you get into like short clock on the side, have to have a three, you got to have some good stuff there. You got to have some things that you can go to. But if you got a full clock and you got execution, like, go to your strengths, go to where you're the most efficient.
So with all these different guys, different coaches doing different things, how is it that great cultures have what? They have shared languages. How is it that you're able to align the messaging that you're doing using the same language, using similar terms, and making sure that even though everyone has different personalities, the kids are hearing the same things from everybody on the
stage? Well, you have to find out what they're taking in. So like we start, like everybody does a lot of workouts in the summer. We don't, we practice. So you got to start it early. So you start it in June, you start it in July. You start with the vernacular. You start with them understanding things. We have our teaching tapes in terms of the plays that we run. And then we have everything in our video catalog. So they can go to these things and they can learn. We have a lot of individual tape with the coaches. So you're talking to them. So you don't have the mixed messages of you asked a question and three assistants gave three different answers, right? And so like, if you got an offensive question, go to PJ. You got a defensive question, go to Paul or Terry. And so like each guy, if you want to know tendencies, go to Brandon. So like each guy has their place in what they're doing and then you work. But then we get into the fall and we take quizzes. We're going to take another quiz next week. So the word association is really important. So give them the word and see if they can write the definition. Because sometimes guys know things, but they don't know how to like write it out. Right. And if you go run the play, they got it. Like they're like, so getting it's more important than anything. We have guys that 100% get it. They won't have a great score on their quiz. I'll be like, man, what's the issue here? Well, we all learn differently. Like sometimes you got, you know, the video helps you. Sometimes the walkthrough helps you. Going live helps you. And then we'll flip it and give them the definition. And then they got to give the word. So you see who's connecting, who's 88% on both, who's 100% on both, who's 60% on both, or one guy's 85 on one and 65 on the other. You're like, whoa, like, well, he learns that way. He learns a little bit different, but you're just trying to find out what they know because what I know is not important. You know, they're the ones that play. So then we're just trying to get them on the same page. And then what we don't know. So we'll do a thing called competitive sets. So we'll get 20 sets and we'll go into a game. And these are going to be 80% of what we're going to run in that game. All right. So we'll get two wins. Black shirts at one end, gold shirts at the other end. They'll run a set. Coaches can't talk. We'll put the board up. So they got to run it. So then they run the same play again, but they change ends. Why they change ends, if you're a multi-positional guy, you change positions. So we get it set up to where they know, okay, I'm the one here. We change ends. I'm the two. Who's coming in at the one? So they know exactly what they're doing. So we go 20 minutes of that. In our 20 sets, we'll get to out of bounds plays. We'll get to side out of bounds plays. We'll just do it for the full 20 minutes. And then when shots go up, you got to get to where you're supposed to be rebounding. You got to get to where you're supposed to be to the safety. We pick the ball up. So you got to, the point guard's got to get to the nail to get long rebounds, but also pick the ball up at that point. So you get a point if you run the play right, and then you get your jammer safety rebounders right, and then you move on. But if you don't, you don't get a point, whatever it is. But whenever that mistake gets made, the play gets written down and the mistake gets written down. And then when we get to the end, we go through it with everybody. So everybody gets that. So say one team made five mistakes, one team made four mistakes, which happens. It just happens. So like now you got nine things. So now we're going to go through all nine things and talk in great detail about it. Well, three or four of them were probably a jammer safety rebounder situation. We don't need to go through that. They know that. They just didn't concentrate. And they just didn't do it. So we got a handful of things we have to go through that they ran in multi-positional things for about probably half of them. And then we just keep doing it.
Yeah, I love this. And you know, it's funny. I was at a shoot around a couple of years ago when Creighton was at Texas. And Coach Mack and his staff, everything they were saying was game volume, game volume, game volume in a walkthrough, right? And when, as you're talking and telling me this part, all I can hear is your practice, guys yelling, guys complaining that it wasn't a mistake. You know what I mean? And but the sense of accountability and the battles that must create, like the complexity, right? We talk about you can only grow through discomfort. And how do you help your people figure out how to create that order out of the complexity? There has to be just some intense moments in your practices.
Well, when you get, and that's a big piece of what we do in recruiting, like it doesn't work with guys that aren't going to be able to pick it up. Like, you know what I mean? But I always tell them, we haven't had anybody in here that couldn't pick it up. Mm-hmm. All you have to do is give an effort and try, but you got to treat it like a class.
Right.
You got to treat it like a class. And I think that's what really helps, because I've had people in recruiting be like, man, I just don't know. I said, man, hey, it doesn't matter. I said, if you like basketball and you'll put the time in, which you will, I just said, you'll really, really enjoy it. But they do get into arguments there because they're like, hey, I did this. And I like it from a standpoint of you did your job and now you right. know you did your job. Well, right. defend yourself, but right. don't start with some BS here. Yeah. And you're trying to con me like I'm, you know, some official down the street. Like, you know what I mean? Like, no, like we're taping this. Like stand up for yourself, but don't be blowing smoke here.
Let me ask you this. And I know you don't like to talk about yourself, but I have to ask you this question because I believe that connection is the key to the relationship, right? Like your ability to connect and figure out what makes each player tick, what's right. meaningful to them. What are the little things that you do, like the intangibles as a coach, that right. help you form and forge those unbelievable bonds that you have yeah. with your players so they let you in, right?
Right.
And they let you in and figure out what makes them tick.
Yeah, just always, you know, whenever you see them, always talk. Like, always talk to them. Like, if you can meet with them without calling a meeting, like the 1 minute meeting, the 2 minute meeting, the 3 minute meeting, like that's more important than anything. Like, if they just know you genuinely care and want them to be successful. So, like, that's my point. The other thing that I do is like, I just try to own when I make mistakes because that's what I want ultimately them to do, because that's when you can grow. You own it, you fix it. You don't own it, you can't fix it. So, but if I don't set that example and say, like, I referee practices because I don't want the back and forth banter with my assistants. I want them to have good relationships. Yeah. Yeah. And that's what a lot of coaches do. And like, all of a sudden they're like, hey, like, coach is killing me, man. Like, he's like over here. And then you're like, so I just ref by myself. And I just said, hey, you can deal with it. I said, but if you're going to like turn on me or like run your mouth, like, I'm going to turn on you. Because that's what a Big Ten official is going to do. If you're disrespectful to him and he gives you a tech and you're still disrespectful to you, he's not giving you a call, and no, nor should he. Like, you know, and so like get them to understand, like, don't jump over that competitive wall and make things personal or do things there. But like as a coach, like anytime that you can have conversations with him when you see him about stuff, even if it's just small talk, like you have to be there and make sure. I'm not a big phone guy. It doesn't mean I don't get on the phone and call recruits, because obviously you have to, or text them because you have to, but I will go out. I go out a lot. So that's what I want to be seen. And I want to see what you're all about. Like, not just like as a player, but just that body language and how you treat other people in high school. I mean, that's who you are. And if you're a jerk and you back talk like your mom in front of people, or like you dog out the manager on your high school team because you're just, you know, you got the power, like, you know, you're not our guy. Like, there's too many good players and good people out there. You know, it's a team sport. It's just not going to work.
So along those lines, what did Coach Katy mean to you? Like, what was the impact he had on you? So you said it earlier, I say it all the time, you never want to follow a legend, but you were following a mentor, you were following, you know what I'm saying? Like a very significant person along your journey.
Yeah.
Can you talk about that a little bit?
Well, I think what he did for us was he gave us a blueprint. And I think a lot of what you see in college basketball, the blueprint is to cut corners to get where you need to be. Because there's a lot of successful people in our Hall of Fame that cut corners, and there's a lot that did it. And like, who are you? Like, we have a great example of someone who's stepping down from the business, and Tony Bennett, who is as straight up as anybody who's ever coached college basketball. And he set a great model for a lot of young coaches, but also his players, because he lived his life through his faith, but he also lived his life how, like, you want that. You want someone who's honest, who's straightforward, that's in tune with themselves, being that role model, being that head coach. And like, that's what we need. Like, we need that for our business. And now he's leaving our business. So, you know, for me, like, I followed Coach Katy, and Coach Katy is one of the nicest people you'll ever meet. But if you saw him coach a game, like, you would think he's a borderline madman. And like, he just like, sometimes would jump over the fight, but you loved how competitive he was, but you loved like how he was an everyday guy. He's just a normal guy. And then like, you could talk with him, you can laugh with him. When I say that for people that don't know him, about him being like a really nice guy, they look at you like you're crazy. But like, that's something from it. I didn't agree with everything. Like when you played, I'm a very opinionated person when it comes to basketball.
But that's okay though. That helps you, right?
No doubt. At age 22, when I got to 32, I realized that he did a lot of things that makes more sense now. He wasn't always the explainer, kind of like your old man back in those days, like do what I say, damn it. And so I kind of got from that, like I explain a lot more, but I think that's kind of the changing of times. You need to give the why, and you should give the why. Right. But like, he really set that for me. He was fair and he was honest. And like that, I never thought like he ever lied to me. Like I always felt like, man, like his harsh truths always came when he was mad. His harsh truths never came when he wasn't mad. He was soft almost. He was like, you're okay, man. You're all right. Hang in there, babe. Keep working. You're fine. And then like when he got mad, like it was a different vernacular. Like, yeah, he was coming at you.
And that look. And then I remember the first time I met him at the final, it was at a Final Four 1,000 years ago. He was with Mac Petty, right?
Yeah.
And went up and Mac, you know, Coach Petty introduced me to him. I just remember like I walked to him like, that was not Coach Katie. Like that wasn't him. I did not just, he was the nicest guy in the world. Like,
yes.
He actually like asked questions, was engaged. I was a young, dumb coach. I'm like, there's no way. So it's funny hearing you say that. But did you feed off that intensity?
No question. And I actually was kind of that way. I was like him for a while because I didn't know any different. My high school coach was very mild mannered, didn't swear. And so he was opposite of that, you know, as a competitor. And so like now, like I needed to steal from him, not be like him. Because I'm not like him. And that's what really the growth for me in the last 10 years has been is just like, hey, it's all right to be the way you are. Like I was almost in theater for the first 10 years. Robbie Hummel would always say it like, the guy I played for, he doesn't coach at Purdue anymore, you know, because I'm a lot different than when, you know, I was a lot younger at the time. And I just felt like, man, I got to have him prepared and we got to be tough. Like it's the Big Ten. You got to be tough. And so like now it's like, I got to have them prepared and like, we will be tough. Like I don't have to go through all the things that we went through before to get to where we have an edge. And
it's just the way of life. It's just how you do things.
Yes. And it's personnel driven. So it's like, get the right people in the room.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If you got the right people in the room that already have that competitive spirit, like you got to push those buttons and get them going at times, but you don't got to push it for 3 hours every single day.
Right.
You just don't.
Yeah. I want to segue into something here, but I want to ask you a question. Speaking of Tony Bennett, you stole my thunder, by the way. Thank you. Okay. Cause I had a great question lined up, Tony Bennett,
right.
But along those lines. Okay. Two things along those lines. One of the best, like Tony, one of the best human beings, one of the best coaches. I mean, when they lost in the first round, right, to the number 16 seed, and then they come back and then win the national championship, right? You had something similar when you lost to Fairleigh Dickinson. Okay. Mm-hmm. Were they 15, 14, 16, whatever it was not the way you want the season to end, right? Correct. So you had a certain message for the whole offseason going into the season, and you operated with a certain, I didn't want to call it a chip on your shoulder, but a certain edge, a certain focus, the ability to recenter. So now you go to the Final Four and you lose the national championship. Just an amazing year. It has to be completely different. How do you do that? Like, how do you find that way to deliver the message, to deliver your approach that's aligned with what you're trying to accomplish, despite like your emotion after one season, then your emotion after
the season? Yeah. You know, going from losing that game in the 116, first of all, Tony Bennett gets beat on a crazy play by Furman, I think, the same day. But yet he sends me this text at midnight. About it's not who you are, it's what you do. You're a basketball coach, but you're a great person and you're going to go through, you know, a really tough period here, but it can also be a painful lesson that you need. And that's what I was like, wow, like how he framed that. Goosebumps. Yeah, that can be a painful lesson that you need. And I was like, well, that's what we're going to do. We're going to face it. Like the one thing that we're not going to do is run from a question about it. And we actually had, through our personality guy, Chad Brown in profile, we actually had four different meetings after the season, in the summer, in the fall, and then during the season. We actually probably had five because I think we had one right before the Big Ten season And then we went to, and that's the one thing that we didn't want to do. Like, we didn't want to come off like we're mad at somebody for asking me this question, or we've had enough of that question. Like, no, like there's nothing wrong with, we got beat straight up. We didn't get screwed over by the officials. Like, nothing crazy happened. We got beat, simple. And like, that's on me as a head coach, that's on them. And if we can own that, I think that gives us the best chance to keep that edge and to be able to make the run that we did and put us in a great position to hopefully, you know, we wanted to win a national championship. We came up a little bit short. So like that piece of it was really, really good for us to kind of like, hey, just, I'm a big believer in you got to sit in some things. Like, you got to sit in it. And like, man, that just like, whenever like I have that or whatever, I don't like it, but it helps me. It helps me get it going and grind and try to get the best out of everybody.
With your staff, you have a couple of young guys on the staff. How are those conversations about things like that, right? Like, you don't want to be overbearing as a mentor towards them, but you also want to share things, you know, kind of accelerate their learning curve, you know, shorten up some things that took us a little bit longer to learn.
Right. Yeah. We have two GAs that played for me. And then we have two other guys on staff, Sasha Stefanovic and PJ Thompson, that played for me. Brandon Brantley and I were teammates. Paul Lusk and I have worked at Purdue together twice and worked at Southern Illinois together also. So I have a lot of familiarity with a lot of our guys. Our Dobo went to Purdue. But the main thing is just trying to explain and give them the background of certain things. Okay, here's this deal in recruiting. Here's what's going on. And here's the why. And here's what you got to look for. And just like constantly like kind of talking to them through. Our GAs work our guys out a lot. So like, you know, kind of talking to them about like, hey, here's what you need to work on. Because when you get down to it, like the two things that only really matter, especially after you play 1 year of college basketball, is what gets me on the court and what gets me off the court. Does like anything else matter in your mind? Because a lot of things matter when I was 17 and I chose a school. I get a kick out of some kid going, yeah, I really like your campus. Like, who cares? Like you like flower beds, like you like the brick buildings, like who cares? And so like everything matters, like the Nikes matter and like this matter. And then after you play 1 year and you don't get what you want, none of it matters. You're like, I'm going to get a good education no matter what, but my happiness is going to be driven through basketball. So when I recruit those guys, I said, hey, your happiness is through you playing and you winning, period, period. So if you're not going to play for us right away, because people will use against us that we redshirt.
Yeah.
He said, well, go somewhere else and not play. And I said, then transfer after that year. Now, where do you sit? You think the schools, you're going to have better schools then? Like worse schools? I don't know. You might. I go, but you're looking at your happiness, but yet you're trying to dodge adversity because I got two guys in this position. I just lost out on a kid. And it was like, well, I just felt I had a better opportunity there. I'm like, yeah, no shit. They're not as good as we are. Yeah, like, no kidding. I go, why can't you come in here and beat these guys out at our place?
Yeah.
And they'll look, you think I can beat them out? I go, yeah, I think you can beat them out. I go, but I think they can beat you out too. So you're like, I'm not trying to set this up where I think you're my guy.
Yeah.
I go, I'm going to give you everything in your power to be successful. But I'm also going to give the other 12 guys the same thing. I go, like, I'm for everybody. Like, so understand that. Like, they're painting a picture of you get to play more, but you got a better chance to develop into a pro here. You got a better chance to win a championship here. You got a better chance to go to the NCAA tournament for 4 years here. And then that's not important to you because we didn't used to be that school. And now we're that school. And then sometimes those guys will look at us like, well, you know, they start to say, hey, guy, that's not our guy right there. And even though we recruited him, we offered him, we got there, you really don't know until, you know, the rubber meets the road.
Our past do not define us, right? But they do shape us.
Yes.
Rumor has it, in your hometown, the most epic pickup games on Friday nights were in your backyard. Is that true?
We had some good ones.
I heard you had some battles.
So they were more battles for me when I was younger because the older players were there. The older players weren't that good, but when they're 3, 4, 5 years older than you physically, those are always challenges. Yeah. So like we had a 50-foot slab of concrete, and then we had railroad ties that got put together